Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Talgrew, back from the Bahamas.
What's up guys? Tropic Tony coming at you live. No, I didn't even get a fucking suntan. I got a little bit of a burn and you can't even see it on camera. So it is what it is.
That probably SPF for the works. Best.
Yeah, honestly. Although I got some blisters on my toes because I bought some new flip-flops for the thing. And obviously, you should break those in before you go. I didn't do that. So in between my big toes and the next toe, just a huge blister on each one. But
ooh,
it is what it is.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, actually. I wore Band-Aids the last day that I was there.
Yeah, well, look, it's a landmark episode. It's number 300, and it's me and you.
Just like their first episode.
It feels like back to the old days, you know? Maddie also had a landmark. I said, it was his birthday yesterday. It fell on a Monday. It sucks, really, doesn't it? But that meant that, you know, he was celebrating, and rightly so. Got to bed late. It's 6 o'clock in the morning, just after 6 o'clock in the morning for you guys. So he hasn't made it up for this one. But still, we're gonna smash ahead with this. We've got a couple of games to recap, none to preview because it is the international break. So that's nice because they play too much football. Before we dive in, Substack founding members, thank you so much to the following: Des Windsor-McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Polman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar, Rajat, and Carlo Fassi. We really appreciate the support from you guys. We appreciate the support from everyone who has subscribed to the Substack. As I started doing now, a little look at what we've had over the last week. The thing that's currently top of the Substack, I would urge everybody to go and read this. If you need to take out a 7-day free trial to do it, then do it. It's absolutely worth it. Isaac has done a brilliant job on this. The title being The Vendetta-Driven Media Strikes Again. It's a bit of a look into everything that's going on with the investigation into Milan. The first part of it is to do with the media narratives, you know, and the attack from certain papers that has come. And the second part of it is the actual facts to the investigation itself, and there are not many. So if you're wanting a really good summary of everything that's been going on with the raid in Casa Milan and everything like that, then I would urge you to go and read that and check out the other content as well. We also did the podcast last week. It was me and Maddie due to AJ's vacation, and we analysed the tie against Roma. Given the Europa League draw was on Friday. And we had something on Pulisic as well as part of the newsletter and looking into his explosion since he joined us. So that's all over the past few days. And without further ado, let's dive in. Slavia Prague, second leg, Europa League, last 16. It was 4-2 in the first leg from San Siro. As we kind of said in the last episode, it's tough to remember games where we've scored four goals and won at San Siro and still felt disappointed at full time. And yet, you know, realistically, maybe we should have said, okay, two goal lead going to the Czech capital is absolutely fine. This was like deja vu because what happened was they got a red card again in the opening 30 minutes that essentially completely killed the game.
Yeah, they got a red card, stamp on Calabria. It is what it is. Bye-bye. And then we scored three really quick goals. Pulisic scored again, and, you know, we'll get onto it. But this goal was his third consecutive game with a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one of the weekend was his fourth consecutive. Yeah, but so he can't be stopped. He's on 20 goal and assist, 21 goals and assist, something like that now.
12 and 8, I think it is. Yeah.
Okay, so 20. Yeah, 20, that's, yeah. I mean, remarkable given what we came from with Macias, Salamakers, Castillejo, shit, even Suso. Like, everyone we've had on the right wing for a long time has not been able to produce those type of numbers. So, you know, big ups to the man right there.
Yes, sir.
And, yeah, it was a nice goal. He got it inside the box, put it on his right foot, and then cut back inside on the left, curled it in. Just beautiful ground ball. Mm. Went straight in.
Used the screen of the defender well as well. Like, that's an underrated thing. You know, he sees the keeper's got a blocked sight line and puts it in the corner. Was nice. I'm going to do that annoying thing and rewind. No, do you think it was a red?
No, not really.
No, me neither. I think that's harsh. The first leg one, I would say it was because it was reckless, and like you can injure an opponent doing that. And you can say the same about the Calabria thing, but his studs were down. His studs were not up. It wasn't two-footed. He never left the ground, or it wasn't over, what they call it, overexertion of force or anything like that. I think he's 0.2 of a second off putting a foot on that ball. And it's just the way that the game dynamics happen that it's a pretty bad one for Calabria, and he made the most of it.
I will just say I literally just rewatched the highlights on stream with Ollie here, so it's a little bit fresh in my memory, even though it may not have sounded like it when I just described the goal, because it's still 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you've given yourself away there.
Yeah, it was bad. But when I watched it, I was like, that was the red card? Calabria was already on the ground, and he kind of kicks out. He's going for the ball, but he kicks out, and whoever gets the red card, I don't know, remember his
Thomas
name.
Thomas Holles.
He, like, unknowingly jumped over Calabria's kick out. And had he have not done that, the card probably would have went the other way.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was super unlucky. He jumped over it unknowingly for the ball, whatever reason. When he landed on Calabria's foot. And it was just barely. It wasn't anything crazy. So do I think we got away with one there? Probably not. But I do think it was harsh on them.
Yeah, I do. I do genuinely believe as well that if Calabria hadn't stayed on the floor for a solid 3 minutes afterwards, and I'm not blaming him for that because that must have really hurt, you know, studs down on your ankle. But if he hadn't stayed down for that long, VAR didn't even really have the time to check it. You know, the game sort of carries on. The ref didn't even give a yellow for it. You know, it wasn't like it was overturned. It was, a straight red card. And then like a couple of minutes after that, Maignan dropped to the floor again, having had that collision early on, knee to knee. He tried to play on twice, the second time with his knee pretty heavily strapped up. I feared the worst with this, to be honest. When it's knee on knee, I thought ligaments, meniscus, something like that. I thought he was in real trouble. And then when he went down again, it's like, get him off. Tried to play on again. It's like, for fuck's sake, get this guy off the field. He's doing damage. He's jumping for balls still. Like, we need to get him off. Sportiello came on. And then that leads us up to the Pulisic goal, which, as we said, was nicely taken. 3 minutes after that, it was 2-0. Lovely move, this one. Really nice move.
Who had the assist? Was it Teo?
Teo, yeah.
Yeah, see? Yeah. It doesn't matter how recent the highlights are. I don't remember shit. And I'm the guy you go to talk about your recap. So so it was a Loftus-Cheek goal, and Teo had a nice little through ball across the face of goal, and Loftus-Cheek tapped it in. It was a good one.
Yeah, it was a nice move, that one. It's you know, it happened exactly this way in the first leg where well, not exactly this way because they equalised with the man and disadvantage, but we were able to get three goals in pretty quick succession before halftime to just kind of like kill any of the vibes that Slavia might have had, and to nullify the home atmosphere a little bit as well. But yeah, to score this second goal so quickly as well and make it 6-1 on aggregate, it was like, that this is finally the goal that means that it's probably over long before that, but
it was 6-2 on aggregate, actually.
It was, yeah, because they scored, yeah.
No, they didn't score.
They scored two at San Siro,
yeah.
But yeah, nice cross face ball, nice ball cross face goal, tapping Loftus-Cheek, continues his good scoring run. That's his eighth goal in 2024. Happy days. And then the third goal was the pick of the bunch.
Before that, though. Bakayo gets a silly yellow card.
Yeah.
And now he's suspended for the first leg against Roma. I don't think we'll need him. I think we'll smoke Roma. But anyways, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, you weren't able to.
No, I didn't get to talk about that. Yeah. In fact, I didn't even know we drew Roma until after I landed. And
let's do that after tops and flops.
Yeah.
Because I want to pick your brains on that draw. Because there's been some differences in opinion, even in the chat, about how tough a draw that may or may not be. The thick one was annoying because he didn't have to make that challenge. Like, he's so far from goal, and we've seen it before. You know, it sort of reminds me of the red card that he got, funnily enough, against Roma, where he made two challenges in a very similar way, where he just follows the ball, the ball receiver all the way out, and he mistimes his tackle through the back. And the ref, because of what's happened with the red card, he also gave Daudera a yellow card not long after the red card. Like, he's got to give it to be consistent at that point. So yeah, that was annoying. He will miss the first leg due to suspension of the quarterfinals. And then Liao, another Pulisic assist for this one. Just a nice little drop off to him, but this was all right.
It was actually a pretty good assist, to be honest.
Yeah,
The length of the pitch that he covered with it was really far. I mean, it was end to end, and they were obviously people in between them. I don't know how much that impacted his vision, but he knew exactly where to find Liao. So props to him, good assist, and then Liao just. I mean, we've been waiting for him to score a goal like that for a while, right? To take a shot and it just be the most accurate missile from deep you've ever seen, curling effort. And then he lost all that shooting ability at the weekend. But this goal was pretty damn nice. So, it's
postage stamp as well. Like those ones that, they nestle right in the top corner, keeping absolutely no chance, even if he had moved for it, which he didn't. He was just rooted to the spot. Like, that's a technique that we know he's capable of. It wasn't a similar goal, really, because it was from a much narrower angle, but it was a similar finish when he whipped that one in the far corner against Atalanta in the league. We know that he's got it in his locker, and that's why it's almost quite baffling that it goes so badly wrong sometimes, because when he hits a shot like that, you think, wow, he's locked in. There's only a few players in the world who can pull off that finish. And it was a beautiful goal just before halftime. That made it 3-0, game over, a couple of changes. He brought off Tomori and Calabria, Chiao and Kalulu came on. Not too much to report there. I think if we're being spoiled, as we are as football fans, we could say that if we really wanted to put our foot down on the throats of Slavia and make it like Liverpool did to Sparta, they won 11-2, was it, or something like that?
Ridiculous.
I know we won 7-3, but like, if you really wanted to rack up the stats and stuff like that and make a big statement, then we could have probably done better in the second half. But I think it was clear that we went into game management knowing that we had had a game on Sunday that it arguably wasn't of the same level of importance, but once you've got that task ticked off, like, right, we're through, you can focus energy onto Sunday, and I think that's what happened.
Yeah, well, and, it's funny you mention Liverpool, because look what happened to Liverpool on Sunday, and they went all out in their little Czech meetup, and whereas we just did what we had to do and then put off the gas, because we could have scored a lot more. It wasn't like we were limited to those three opportunities. I think Pulisic had a chance that he missed actually in the opening 10-15 minutes, so we could have had more. We could have had 5 goals this game, we could have had 6 goals this game, and the first leg we missed a lot of opportunities as well. So it's not like we were ever in any real danger. Yes, we didn't play too great the first match, but it was still pretty routine business from us, and we could have put it more. That's really it. Their goal came in the 84th minute. It was actually nearly a carbon copy of Pulisic's goal. Put it on his right foot, cut left, cut inside, use the screen and curl in for a low left corner. So it was almost the exact same thing. It was like they said, hey, these guys are pretty good, let's just do what they're doing. And they got one back.
A nice goal. Chiao should have done better on that for me. Just allowed him.
Story of his season, huh?
Yeah, just allowed him a bit too much space to shoot. I'm not going to blame Sportiello. It was a great shot into the bottom corner that I don't think even Maignan would have saved. People might disagree with that, but do you know what? It's not like there's necessarily friendly relations between the clubs or anything like that, but the way that those two legs went for them, with the red cards and the fact that they found themselves in a hole very early on, and it was a pretty miserable second leg compared to what they were expecting. I was kind of glad that they got that goal just to give the fans something to cheer. It was like they'd won the game. The reaction when that went in, and you could see how much that meant. Like, the players had been saying in the build up, this is the biggest game of our careers. The manager said biggest game in the club's history and stuff like that. So
and he also said he was confident they'd win this leg. So
yeah, I don't think he was legislating for another red card inside 30 minutes. But if you can't control your players, man, that's nothing to do with us. Yeah, Tipisovsky said after the game that he thought that He said it was a shame, I think, above all, that the red card had been given, but he expressed doubts about the decision, sort of in a similar way to we have, that it was a timing issue, that VAR only shows the one replay at such a speed where it looks so much worse than it actually is. And I tend to agree with him. Like, we can overanalyze all these incidents. But, yeah, we got the job done. 7-3 on aggregate, through into the next round with, I'd say, relatively stress-free, which is good. Although we did end up with, what was it, 3 players on a yellow card?
Yeah.
So, yeah, tops and flops from this one. And then we'll talk about the draw.
This one is kind of a toss-up, to be honest. You could go Liao, you could go Pulisic. They both had a goal and assist. They both had good goals. They both had good assists. So it's really...
You pick one, I'll pick the other.
Let's just do that. Then, you know, I'll pick Pulisic because if those are my choices, you know what I'm going to do.
I wonder why. Yeah, Liao for me. Exactly what you said. Those two look really, really good. Like, when I know 10 men and I know the level of opponent and shit like that, but when both fire at the same time, I don't think there's many that can stop us. You know, when we have a genuine two-pronged attack, the problem is that it feels like for more than half of the season, they've both not clicked at the same time. Like, one of them's had a good game, the other hasn't. But maybe that's just the nature of the beast. Like, some teams defend better to one side than the other. Both have been double-teamed a fair bit this season. But, yeah, those were the two tops from the game, in my opinion.
The craziest part is that, you know, Liao can assist Pulisic, and Pulisic can assist Liao in the same game, and yet they hate each other so much, you know?
Yeah.
According to Twitter and everything else that you see, it's like, where's this narrative coming from there?
They're
working well together. They're not, they're friends, you know?
When Pulisic played that ball to Liao and he put it in the top corner, the camera picked Pulisic up saying, "Fucking lucky bastard." And then he did the assist.
Yeah.
That was good to see them assisting each other good. Brings us on to the flop. The one player in the attack that didn't get involved at all, Olivier Giroud. Potential flop. I'm not saying that's my pick, but he's the one in the attack.
I mean, it's a good pick because, to be honest with you, I forgot that he was there.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to pick one of the defenders just because I don't feel like they did a whole lot. Tamora got the yellow, which gets him suspended. But I do feel bad even picking him. He only played like 45 minutes, and he's been out forever. I think Giroud's a safe pick, but really either of the center backs, I'm fine with any.
I'd probably agree with Tamora. I think the situation of the game didn't warrant such a silly tackle. You know, he didn't need to be so aggressive. And knowing that he was a yellow card from missing the first leg, and obviously this was all before the draw and stuff, but that first leg could have been Liverpool away or something. You don't know. And I just think, you know, it could still be difficult because we're expected to beat Roma to take an advantage there, and not having him hurts. And it hurts because we've been looking for some kind of consistency in the back line as well to build up chemistry, try finish the season strong. In terms of our defensive record, which has been abysmal this season, really. And yeah, that yellow card means that we can't do that. And it was at a situation in the game where we were 2-0 up as well. So, you know, we were 6-2 up on aggregate, absolutely coasting towards victory. Just wasn't needed. So I'd agree with that pick. And I'd throw Maignan in there. That's a... You know what I mean? Because it's like, look, did he do anything that was a huge error? No, but he put himself under pressure, making that clearance by hanging on to the ball for too long. Then he gets the collision, and then he tries to play on twice with a clearly damaged knee.
I mean, but then after the game, he said, it's just a bruise. Like, was it even that damaged? It just hurt.
I do wonder if there was a little bit of pageantry involved in that whole thing. If it was like early stages of the game. He was obviously hurt, but yeah, early stages of the game, take a bit of sting out of the atmosphere by making sure the ball's not in play for the first 7 minutes, basically.
Yeah.
Right, on to the draw then. Roma, and then the winner of Bayer Leverkusen v West Ham. How do you feel? Could it have gone better, worse?
I mean, yeah, it could have gone both ways, right? Like, it could have drew
silly question.
Liverpool. I think that's probably the ideal matchup for the final. Not that Leverkusen's going to be an easy semifinal game. I think West Ham would be. but I think we beat Roma. I mean, we haven't lost to them since like 2019. We beat them all the time. Yeah, it's a different one. It's De Rossi instead of Mourinho, but like, let's look at what this mighty new Roma have done, right? They're on a big win streak here of one. And it's against Sassuolo, a 1-0 victory over the 19th place team. And this is the attacking De Rossi side that I'm supposed to be fearful of. I mean, come on. They lost 1-0 to Brighton in the game before that. 2-2 draw to shitty Fiorentina. Like, don't know. This ain't doing it. Well,
that's our first game after the break.
I mean, maybe, yeah, whatever. But I don't know. It's not doing it for me. Yeah, they beat Monza by a lot, and we weren't able to do that. And they beat Brighton 4-0 in the first leg, so it's not like the second leg really mattered a whole lot. But they also drew both games to Feyenoord. The teams they beat in this run under De Rossi have not been impressive. Frosinone, no. Torino, like Cagliari, Salernitana, Al Shabab, Hellas Verona. Like, you want me to be impressed by these victories? Al-Shabaab. One game they played of I don't know why they did a friendly in the middle of January. The one game they played against top level competition was Inter, and they got smoked 4-2. Like,
they played well in that, but they ran out of steam. I think they were up twice, were they?
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
They were up 2-0 at half, and they blew that lead. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
We know a little bit about, but still, I don't know. They lost the derby right before they played us, lost to us, and then lost Mourinho, and I don't know.
They're definitely better. Like, I think they're a better team, and they're obtaining better results, but I think you can make a strong argument that stylistically, I'd rather face this De Rossi Roma team than a Mourinho Roma team, who,
me too.
You know what Jose would do. He'd mind games from the start, and you know. Whereas I think with De Rossi, they're trying to play good football on the front foot, but from the bits that I've seen, they do leave a bit open at the back. I'd rather play that than a team that's going to close up at San Siro, put 10 behind the ball, and then try and nick it at home. You know.
Yeah.
So I think it could be a good tie. I think obviously it'll get a lot of hype from the Italian media, but I think the tie of the round's probably Liverpool-Atalanta. It should be a bloodbath, but at the same time, it could just be a really fucking fun game.
That, yeah, I don't know who I want to see win that, because we lose to both.
Yeah. Losing to Atalanta in Dublin would be mental, by the way.
It'd be awful.
Yeah, and then... And
I hope we get West Ham in the semi. I wanted West Ham this round, so I would like to play them.
For those who don't listen to the bonus, you should go listen to the bonus, because we picked who we think will win and who will go all the way. I think West Ham beat Leverkusen. They're not having a brilliant season domestically, but they seem to be a different animal in Europe for whatever reason. And I'm just looking at Leverkusen. They want to close out their first league win of the Bundesliga era. I think it is, anyway. Well, it's the first league win in a long time, anyway. And they got taken all the way by Karabag. You know, Karabag went 2-0 up in the return leg when they were a man down. They really should have seen that out, but Patrick Schick came to the rescue with two goals in added time. They were 3 minutes away from not even being an opponent. We're talking about Karabag v West Ham as a potential semi-final opponent. I just hope that those cracks can perhaps be exploited by a better opponent. I do think West Ham have a bit going forward as well, but we'll see. It could well be 6-0 Leverkusen, who the fuck knows. Let's move on then to the game at the weekend against Hellas Verona. I think we all predict narrow wins for this? No, you said 3-0. No, you were really 3-0. Close.
Yeah,
you were really close with that.
Yeah,
one.
So were you. You said 2-1.
So 2-1. Yeah. This is one of those where, like, no matter how you look at our record against Verona, it's really good. Like, we have a good run against them. It's been a long time since we lost against them, and yet we always seem to make things more difficult than we should against them, especially away from home. Like, we needed that comeback in the Scudetto season at home, and then we needed to come from behind away as well. And then last season it was a Tonali winner relatively late on. So, like, it can be a tough place to play. They hate us for some reason. Like, they were, every time one of our players got the ball, they were chanting like Leao Vafanculo, and it's like, fucking hell, what, you know, they just despise us. And yet I was really quite happy with this performance. I think there's always a fear that the energy levels drop collectively after a European night, no matter how easy it was to manage the game. You know, when you're playing Sunday early kickoff, really you've got two full days in between, you've got to travel back and all that. I just worried that we might, say, go behind early and then find it really difficult to get back into the game. I guess the surprise of the starting lineup was Noah Okafor starting up front.
Yeah, I was really happy with that. That was exactly what I wanted to see. You know, I haven't been wanting Drew to start the whole season. I think that was pretty obvious, you know. And I do feel a little bit bad for Jovic, but it's just he's proven that he's ineffective from the start. He needs to be playing in a two-striker formation. So if you're going to give Giroud the rest, then you do it this way with Okafor, who has looked good just about every time he's played, whether he scores or not. And, I mean, this was another game like that, right? Did he get the assist for the Pulisic goal? I can't remember. No, because the goalkeeper got a hand to it, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, he might as well have. He did absolutely everything for that goal.
Yeah.
He stole the ball off the last man, got the wrong goal.
I imagine Drew trying to do that. God, no chance. He can't even run it. But, I mean, it was relatively tame, calm, boring game in the first half. Like, we had opportunities. Liao missed a couple sitters. That's the story of this game. I think Pulisic missed one early as well that would have been real fucking nice. He kind of the same thing, curled it in, but it just went just wide. It was a really nice shot. And then
we hit the bar twice.
Yes, Pulisic was one of them.
Pulisic hit the bar, and then Okafor from the corner headed over to him, and he hit it on the volley. It was a really, really...
Tomori missed a corner as well.
Yes, yeah, he should have done better. It was free kick early on. Tao whipped it. Yeah, he should have done better with that. That being said, you know, on the full, he's a centre-back, side-foot finish, perhaps a tad difficult, but I think he should have buried that one. We created plenty in the first half, and I think that's what was important. You know, it wasn't like we fluked our way into a one-goal half-time lead. We had the better of the play. Okafor being up front made us look a lot more dynamic as well. You know, the movement in and around the box was good. A lot of time, Loftus-Cheek was playing further forward to you know, pin them back a bit, and I think that that worked pretty well. And then the first goal of the game took 44 minutes to come, and we'd had some bad luck, you know, hitting the bar twice, and I think we were due a couple of lucky bounces, and they both happened.
This was very good luck.
They both happened in the same run by Teo.
He took it to basically the corner flag, tried to cross it, hits the first man, keeps it in on the byline, tries to make another pass, blocked again, bounces straight back to his foot, and he just says, fuck it, and taps it and goes straight in. So, I mean, it was very weird. His celebration was fitting for a goal like that. You know, I don't know, because he didn't plan that. No one did.
A couple of lucky ricochets without a doubt, but I suppose you've still got to... You got to gamble that the ball might come out the other side, and it still should, I guess, a good touch on both of the bounces to like bring the ball back under control. And then good composure when he is one-on-one with the keeper, because he was actually at a narrower angle than what I remember watching it live. Like, you see the replays, that was the only place he could put it to score. And he puts it over Montipo as he came off his line. So that was a good finish. It's one of those where, like, as well, you're thinking, something's going to happen. VAR's going to step in and say, like, he controlled it with his hand, or the ball went out of play. Yeah, so did I. I think the Verona players did as well. They seemed to kind of stop, and the path opened up for him to go through. That was a perfect time to score, because if we'd gone in 0-0 at halftime, I just think there'd have been a few more doubts. Pioli might have been contemplating some changes that didn't need to happen and stuff like that. And then we got the second... Oh, no, let's talk about the celebration, actually, because there was a bit of controversy, whatever, surrounding this one. As you said, he just goes over to the camera and does a shrug. The celebration that he has done for years now, basically since he joined us, I think, and has been shamelessly copied by Di Marco for whatever reason. Guy's a nonce. I mean, in the slang term, it's not a literal accusation before his lawyers come for us. Stop copying.
Would it be the first controversy around an Inter player this week, huh?
No, it wouldn't. No. Acerbi as well. I'm absolutely stunned. I must say, guy's a rat. It'd be interesting to see how that plays out. I've just read before we started recording that, like, is it the prosecutor or whatever has opened a separate investigation into it? So he's not got a ban for now, but, like, something's coming, you know, something's going to happen. And Vlahovic also got a game ban. I hope so, you know. Come on. 15, go to
that'd be great, huh?
Yeah, lay down the law.
Respect.
Yeah, I found it funny because you know what everyone says about Gazzetta, you know, it's an Inter paper, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking first thing this morning when I looked at the paper, I thought, it fucking better be that. You know, that better be the front page story, because it's the thing that everybody's talking about. And if you don't put it front and center because of, you know, your persuasions as the edit one, what was it? It was Inter wanting Albert Gudmundsson in the summer.
Yeah.
So there you go. There was a little bit, there was a top bar that was dedicated to it, but I know you got to be careful with what you report and stuff because, you know, it's now technically an ongoing investigation. So I just thought, yeah, I'm not surprised that's not front and center. Anyway, yeah, the celebration shrug. And then there was a misunderstanding because apparently what's happened is Verona's team manager has said to their manager, their head coach, Baroni, that was a provocation towards our fans, the shrug. Now, the ultras are behind the goal, so I don't know why they thought it was at them because he went over to the corner flag to do it. So it's not even in their direction. But Baroni has kicked off then with the fourth official, who has had a word with the referee. And a referee, Maurizio Mariani, showed absolutely no bottle at all and just goes over and gives him a yellow card just because that's what he
was told. So on the replay, I saw more than just a shrug. I saw the shrug, and then as he was walking away, I don't know who it was, if it was towards a bench or if it was towards fans, but I saw him doing the little like keep talking thing.
Yes.
Which you see often, and it is also not a card.
Apparently, the Dazn feed said that what Teo was saying was, we'll talk after. Like, as in, I'll explain my celebration rather than keep fucking talking, you so-and-so. So I think that's an important distinction to make, presuming it's true. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that part. But yeah, it is what it is. It's a stupid yellow, especially when you see a Cherby not getting a yellow card for dropping the N-word. You know, because he said sorry, like
twice, yeah, and then pointed at Turam and said,
yeah, "How can I be racist? Have a black teammate? Like, he didn't choose your teammates, but you know, like, that's crazy." It's just again, if you see, you know, the fair play table, you'll see it's anything but. You know, there's one team that's getting more yellow cards and red cards than anyone else. A lot being dubious. And another team from the same city that wears very similar jerseys, just with blue, not getting any red cards this season or double yellows and the least amount of yellows, but definitely enough controversies to warrant it, you know. I think the AIA came out and said that there were 8 game-winning penalties awarded to this team that were incorrect. So, you know, you take those eight wins away and
is that what they
table
said?
Looks a bit different. Yeah. So, you know.
Oh, man.
Interesting to think about, but hey, what am I?
Interesting.
You know? And then totally off topic, but, you know, there was a referee who retired from refereeing so that he could talk about the things he'd seen inside the AIA. So that'll be a really unique report when that comes out. And all I got to say is, you know, fingers crossed that we hold on to second place in case anything happens. So,
yeah. You never know what can happen. Some teams steal Scudetti when that sort of thing happens. Where are we? Pulisic goal. Yeah, 50th minute. Okafor steals the ball, goes through on goal. Shot's going in. It's a good save by Montipo, to be fair. Pulisic, again, good positioning to be on hand for the tap-in. Not only has he now hit his season high, personally, in terms of goals with 12, across all competitions, but that was our 5,000th goal in Serie A.
He's in good company. Nordahl, Kaká. I'm forgetting the others now.
It was Daniele Massaro.
Massaro,
super sub. And the other one is Paulo Ferreira, I believe, from a long time ago. Mm. People might not remember him. I don't think he really did that much for us. But
that was alive.
Yeah. Kaká, the Kaká thing's cool.
Yeah. Oh, and they did the same celebration too. The point to the sky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did have to ask if he always does that.
Did
his tiger thing, you know?
He'll do that. He does like a little fist pump, which I really enjoy because it's just good, clean
Let's
American.
Let's fucking
fun,
go.
Yeah. All right, boys. And then sometimes he does the point to the sky because America is obsessed with good Christian values. And I don't know why. That's just one of the things we do, apparently. So, yeah. Good goal. And then our boy Chukwueze finally got his first Serie A goal, huh?
I didn't know this, right? Before the Chuk thing, their their guy who scored, and it was a lovely goal. Nice first-time shot. I don't think Maignan had any chance with that one, to be honest.
Which, yeah, he played immediately after, so the bruised knee thing wasn't so... Oh, but he did have another injury towards the end of the game, because he didn't take... he wasn't taking the goal kicks anymore. He did a full split, so I wouldn't be shocked if something comes out like a pulled groin, something like that, hopefully.
He's, they've done the checks on him, and he's fine, apparently. He is fine, and France are intending to start him over the international break, so we can look forward to an injury report from them in a few days.
So he's not returning, okay.
The guy who scored for Verona, Noslin, his first name is Tijani, spelled exactly the same as Reinders. That's interesting. It's not that interesting, really. I've just noticed that for the first time here. And Chukwueze, this goal was the pick of the bunch. Hell of a volley. I was actually, at the moment when the goal went in, distracted because there were people fighting outside of our window on our street. So I've got up. I won't show you my setup, but the window is right next to the TV. And we're looking out the window, and then we hear the commentator say, "Oh my goodness, what a hit from Chukwueze. I can't believe I missed his first Serie A goal." Had a little peek, and yeah, what a finish that was. Like, again, technique needed to hit that on the volley with the sort of instep inside the far corner.
I thought it looked kind of weird the way he hit it. You know, I'm not going to pretend like I know technique better than he does, but
I think he should
look just a little awkward. It was just a strange looking shot, and obviously it went in, so that's all that matters. But good on him. You mentioned, you know, your TV setup. Someone mentioned my situation because people called me out on Twitter about it, which was funny. I haven't been active on Twitter in a while, but I was on vacation, so I was like, yeah, let me get some tweets in, you know. Because that's what I do.
That's
apparently
what you do, yeah. Work yourself up.
A few weeks back, apparently, I had said it's 2024. I do not use streaming websites anymore. Well, I was out of the country and I needed one, and I got caught out for that. But I did not use any streaming websites because turns out the Bahamas play Serie A on ESPN. So after three streaming sites failed because the hotel Wi-Fi just wouldn't allow it. I just turned on the TV to see what else was on, and I'm flipping through the channels, and all of a sudden I see the game. I said, oh shit, this is it.
I wondered because you were like replying in the chat really quickly with stuff that's happened. I'm thinking, oh no, there's going to be spoilers for you here if you're behind on a stream. But you were like at the same pace as all of us. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah, good on the Bahamas.
Yeah, it was cool. They played every fucking league. Like, we were walking around the resort, there was a random game on, and I was like, who the fuck are these people? Like, I thought maybe it was Bahama League, but not to offend anyone, but it looked like really big stadiums filled with people, and I was like, I just don't think they have that here. Like,
probably like Brazilian League or something.
So I looked it up because there was a team called Always Ready, and I was like, that's a weird name. I could find them. Bolivian League.
Yeah, Bolivia, yeah. Yeah.
That's a weird league to have on TV, but they did. Good for them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like going to the Caribbean. I said I've not been for a long time, but like you get the perfect mix of English and American sport. As someone who quite likes the American sports, like you've got earlier in the day, all the Premier League games, and then later in the night, the American sports starts. So yeah, it is cool over there. I don't think Bahamas is part of the Caribbean, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Is it? Right, cool. Yeah. Good. Glad we're not going to be called out for that in the comments. One of the things as well, Chukwueze, he did a really good post-game interview where he said, look, I can't expect to have a starting spot at the moment. The guy ahead of me is scoring and producing, so I've just got to work hard and be ready for my chances. That's really good, you know. He is going to say that. He's not going to come out and be like, I'm fucking better than Pulisic. What's going on, Stefano? But the reaction when he scored, like the entire team mobbed him. Leao picked him up. Like he had a big smile on his face. And I think you can just tell how well-liked he is. Not that there was any implication that everyone hated him, but I think it just meant so much to everybody, not just him. And I really hope that we see him kick on now and he has a strong end to the season. Because if he does start scoring across all competitions, well, the two competitions that we have left, then we can rotate more effectively. We're not relying on... Because at the moment, we're thinking Chuk and Jovic are only useful off the bench. They can't really start games. But it might just alter the perceptions a little bit. Top and flop.
I'm going to go with Teo Hernandez for my top. I think he just was everywhere. And maybe it was just because he had Tomori back that he felt comfortable enough to get forward again and not having to play super defensively. But, I mean, the dude was all over. He had a wonder goal as usual. Yeah, just really happy performance from him. So I'm going Teo.
Yeah, best performance of the season from him. And I think I think it's almost symbolic of the rise that he's had in 2024. Like, he ended last year playing centre-back because of the emergency. And it feels like ever since he's gone back out to left-back, it's just clicked again for him. You know, him and Liao are combining much better. He's getting forward. He's getting into dangerous areas. He's leading counter-attacks. He led a couple in this game that were spurned. Yeah, got the goal, which was very, very much deserved. He defended well in this game as well. Definitely his best performance of the season for me. He's got 11 goal contributions in 2024. 3 goals, 8 assists. And that is more than Lautaro. It's more than Vlahovic. It's more than Lukaku, who were obviously strikers. So there we are. He's on a real upward curve at the moment. And let's hope we can get that renewal sorted before the summer, because I think like a big tournament at the Euros could be a bit of a worry for us. What else have we got? Yeah, just the only sour note of Teo was that he got the yellow card. That means he will miss the Fiorentina game. So it'd be interesting to see how we cope with his absence there.
Yeah, do we even have another
Florenzi? Well, Florenzi's going to have to play there, which is a little bit of a worry because like Nico Gonzalez is potentially their best player. So we could have done without that, but I'm going to say, unlike the tomorrow one, this one just wasn't his fault. Like, he shouldn't be banned for this game.
Yeah, I agree.
However, you know, the games that follow, you got into Juve back to back. You think maybe we get out of the way now and then.
Probably for the best.
Yeah. Flop.
I'm going to go Liao. I think he just did everything wrong. He made a bunch
he
of
did
beautiful.
Everything wrong.
Yeah, he made a bunch of beautiful runs that led to really shitty efforts on goal. I mean, there was one in like, I don't know, the 60th minute around there, maybe 65, where he was one-on-one with the keeper.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even get close to goal. Just way off. And that was repeated quite a few times in the first half. He was always in on goal. And for the guy who just scored the winner goal against Slavia, you know, a few days prior, to not even find the target, it was
the easier finish.
Yeah, it was a really bad performance from him, in my opinion. You know, his running was great, his dribbling was great, but the frustration is amplified when it ends the way it did. You know,
because as well, that really would have killed the game in that moment. You know, and then it becomes 2-1 not long after, and you're like, for fuck's sake. You know, it's fine margins. It's fine margins. Like, the game swung then in what happened afterwards. Thankfully, we saw out the win. But yeah, he had a couple of options there, really, for me. He could have rounded the keeper fairly easily, taking it past him, or he could have dinked it over him. And for some reason, he tried to sort of find the far corner. And he didn't just knock it wide. It was like 3 yards wide.
Yeah, I just looked it up right now just to double check, and he had 0 shots on target. So, yeah.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I'd agree. That is also my pick for flop. However, I would be more worried, as mad as this sounds, I'd be more worried if he wasn't getting those chances, you know, than if he was just completely out of the game. So let's just hope he takes the next one, because I think we can all agree in 2024 he's been better. You know, since that goal drought ended, he has looked a bit more like his confident self, which is good. And just a final note on the game, Kalulu came off at halftime. I said at the time, probably only got 45 minutes in his legs. It's his first start in 140 days. Nope, ligament damage. Made a class. I feel sorry for him. Shouldn't laugh. Like, it's been a fucking miserable season for him, to be honest. Yeah. And
because he looked better than Chow did when Chow returned.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So I really expected a lot from him. This is the second time he's come back from injury this season and gotten hurt in the first game back. So. That's wildly frustrating, and hope he gets this shit sorted, because he looked built, like, really strong, stacked. Good, ready. But one thing you can't put muscle on is, you know, your knee ligaments, right? Like,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, you could train them a little bit, but at the end of the day, they're still ligaments. They're not getting that much stronger. So,
I think it was a knee trauma as well. Knee trauma meaning like a collision rather than
right. And I remember when it happened,
yeah,
he did buckle sideways a bit. So yeah,
you went down. It was exactly the kind of challenge where I knackered my meniscus. So when it happened, I instantly thought, oh no, that's not good. You know, he could be out for a while here. But then sort of got to halftime and you're thinking, all right, maybe the change was minutes based, maybe it was precautionary, and then yeah, it turns out he has hurt it. 6 weeks out is probably the most accurate forecast on how long we won't have him for. And it is a bit of a blow because, you know, the games will come thick and fast again after the break and he will miss another very important part of the season. And I just feel sorry for him on a personal note. Gazzetta
and we
said,
were so close to having a full squad back. We only had one player injured. I was getting ready to clear my timer, but here we are, 1,042 days later.
There is a chance, though, because Pabega was still expected to miss another month plus. There is a chance that they both return at the same time and thus two become zero and, you know, we can have a massive celebration, but you know what's going to happen now. Someone else will suffer a season-ending injury. Let's do a couple of questions and then we'll wrap up.
Very few, because I do got to get going here.
Let me try and pick one then.
Okay.
Obviously, we've got the international break coming up, so in next week's episode, maybe we will just go through, because we've got 10 questions here, we'll go through some of them and do it that way. And I'm trying to get a guest on for that, so stay tuned. Adnan asks, do you see a possibility of Milan winning the Champions League in the next 3 years?
A possibility? Yeah, I mean, if you're in the game or if you're in the tournament, there's a possibility. Is it a big one? Probably not, because there's just so much luck that goes into winning the Champions League, unless you're a team like Manchester City and you're just steamrolling everyone. But the reality is, in the Champions League, in the late stages, most every team can beat every team, right? You know, like we have a Goliath matchup this round, isn't it?
City
and Real Madrid.
Yeah.
The most winningest team in the competition's history versus the most recent winners who just got a treble, who look like they might get another treble. Like, it's, I mean, that's a huge matchup and it's a quarterfinal. That's insane. So that's bad luck for those teams, right? One of them goes out that probably had a good path to the final. Then you look at how Inter got to the final last season, playing two Portuguese teams and then us, a team that, let's be real, they've had our number for a while now. That's very good luck than losing to City, which was probably expected. And they probably had good luck in that it was only 1-0, because Holland missed a few good chances also. So, you know, a lot of luck goes into winning the Champions League. Can we get good luck? Yeah, of course. I mean, we just had Slavia in a knockout round of the Europa, and we got Roma, a team we've dog walked for 5 years now. So, good luck happens. And I think we had good luck as well in our run with Spurs and then, you know, the greatest Napoli side in history. So maybe it wasn't that good of luck, but we smoked them. I don't know. A lot of it comes down to the group, right? Like being pot four, we obviously were in the hardest group. And it goes to show, because both Dortmund and PSG, the teams that finished above us in the group, are still in the quarterfinals. So
Dortmund, you know, have a real chance at the final, you know.
That's the luck. You know, you look at that, could have been us. Well, we would have had PSV in the opening round. Who do they have now? It's, again, the weakest team, right?
Atletico Madrid.
Okay, maybe not the weakest team, but
it would be tough, team. But like...
Team to put out Inter, so...
Yeah, yeah. They're still in crisis, Atletico, regardless. It does say something into, like, runaway Serie A leaders, and they got turned over in the second leg by Atletico Madrid, who'd won 2 in 7 games and a 4th in La Liga. Like, it's not a great look for the league, is it? I agree with you. You need luck. It's such a small percentage. You know, a lot of things need to line up. We need to become a better team, first of all. You know, and that starts with the work that we do in the summer transfer windows and stuff like that. We don't even know what the coach is going to be going into next season. I think if you get in a proven winner... And I'm not going to say Conte, because, like, historically he's struggled in European competitions, but you get someone in who can allow us to take that next step, then the percentage jumps a little bit. But ultimately you're fighting against state-owned clubs and teams.
And we got to say healthy, because I genuinely do believe we're one of the top teams in Europe when we're fully fit with all of our starting 11. Like, you see how we played against Verona. Granted, it's fucking Verona, like, right? Yeah. Like, that's not a big deal, but that 11 was mostly our best 11, and we looked fantastic. And Liao was off. Our best player was the flop of the match, and we looked like one of the best teams in the world. You get everyone firing on full cylinders, everyone healthy. Yeah, we could make a run at something. And if we win Europa League, then we're in pot one. Now we got the easy pot to go through. I mean, maybe not the easy pot, but a better chance at an easy group stage next season.
That's important as well.
Yeah. If we just qualify for being second in Serie A, we might move up to pot three this season. I got to look at the coefficient to figure that out, but that's not a whole lot better than being pot four.
We'll jump above Juventus. Sorry.
Okay. No, when you're a big team and you're in pot four, that means you're always getting the group of death. Because you're always going to get a pot one team, which is a winner or a champion. You know that going into the game. You're the big team in number four. So then you have another big team who's pot two. And then you have guys who are just slightly there, you know, up and down a little bit in pot three. Or it'll be one of those Eastern European sides that are just always in because there's no other teams in their league. So you're always going to be in the tough pot when you're or the tough group when you're pot four, pot three. If we get one or two, now all of a sudden there's a chance that it's a bit easier and that we could kind of rest a bit in the group stage because those are six games you have to play. And for us last season and this season, every single one of them was do or die. Every single one of them. It comes down to luck.
It does. It does. And tournament football is a different animal as well. I think Inter have proven that they'd won every single game in 2024. They had a first leg league to take to an Atletico side in crisis and they got Simeone. Like, you know, for all the talk of Inter potentially being a Champions League favourite and stuff like that, they'll be sat on the couch from now until the end in midweek from now until end of the season, and they then drop points against Napoli at home on Sunday. So there's so many different, you know, caveats and things. But I'd say don't expect us to win it within 3 years. But we're on. I feel like we're with the project and everything, and our financial situation, we're on a good path. You know, we just need to turn that into something now. And it probably starts with more domestic dominance than...
And I have a hunch that the Premier League's no longer going to be having a vice grip on talent. It looks like that's changing a bit with these recent things going down on Nottingham Forest and...
Yeah, profit and loss, sustainability.
Everton. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean... We'll see if anything ever comes of City's 115 FFP violations. Doubt it.
I said the Klopp era is coming to an end as well, and we'll see how long Pep stays for.
When you win a treble, what else is there to do with the team? You know, do it again.
Do it again. He's going to do it again.
And then after that, genuinely, like, fuck off into the sunset. You've done it all everywhere.
Yeah, go test yourself at a lower team, like Huddersfield. Yeah, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching and listening. As said, we'll be back in a week with a sort of mid-international break episode. We'll do something a little bit different for that, in addition to obviously previewing the Fiorentina game that comes after the break. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
Thank you, everyone who's listened. I don't know how many of you have been around since episode one.
But oh, yeah.
This was a big landmark for us, 300. So, you know, keep it up. Hope to see you guys at episode 600.
Yeah, well said, man. Let us know if you have listened since episode one, or let us know from which episode you started listening. I'm interested to see how many like long-term listeners that we've got. If you join new, then fantastic. But yeah, always interesting to find that kind of thing out. But yeah, in the meantime, we'll be back in a week.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'area all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!